This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hey there, thank you for listening to Resource Center, where industry experts, business owners, and hands-on entrepreneurs compare useful notes on managing and growing their business. My name is Audrey Raj. Now, I don't know if you've noticed, but we are at the end of another decade. It's not as cool as 1999, but hey, some pretty monumental and cool stuff did happen in this decade that shaped the way we do business today. And because of this, we thought we'd put together a Decade in Review special on Resource Center, focusing on the things that have evolved and changed the world of work and business dramatically in the past decade. First up on this episode, the trends that have changed HR.
Hi, I'm Chitong. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Engage Rocket. What we do is we're the leading Asian software provider for real-time analytics across the employee lifecycle. So we help companies to collect real-time feedback from their staff, from hire to retire, in order to help them make better people decisions, improve talent retention and productivity.
Chitong, thanks for taking the time to join us. Now, you were the former regional director of Gallup, but now you're full-time at Engage Rocket. And as I understand, Engage Rocket, it's a bit like a Fitbit for management to enhance organizational health and productivity. And it's a HR tech startup that's based in Singapore. And, you know, I was just thinking, like, HR tech like this obviously didn't exist back in 2010, but we now have all this AI-enabled, tech-enabled facilities that are helping people in the HR field, correct?
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show, Audrey. And I think to say that HR tech didn't exist 10 years ago is probably not giving the not giving the tech companies enough credit. It did exist, and to a certain extent, it exists in some way or form still today, where you have all your employee records, perhaps on Excel, which is still many small businesses still do that. Mm-hmm. So Excel existed 10 years ago. You do have some HR software as well. So they call them HR information systems, where you store your joining date, your leave date, your payroll system. So these existed 10 years ago. I think the biggest change for HR tech over the last decade has actually been an infusion of technology and data into the rest of the employee life cycle. So even LinkedIn, for example, was not a thing. Before 2010, we were still submitting paper resumes, LinkedIn profiles, social media profiles, were just not that credible information about the individual. Just because not many employers knew how to use them, not many individuals knew how to optimize them. But today, when you look on LinkedIn, if your company doesn't have a LinkedIn profile, it's very difficult to attract good talent. And if you're a smart, up-and-coming talent, you want to make sure that your LinkedIn profile says that front and center. So even just from that perspective, it's very different. And then as you go along the life cycle, 85% of resumes actually don't even make it into the hands of the recruiters or the talent acquisition folk, because they get screened out by various algorithms that the companies are now deploying either in-house or through third-party software that they're using. And then once they come on board, there's your first 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. In theory, your companies should be focusing very heavily on that onboarding period, as they say, because how engaged you are during that period and getting your feedback about your candidate experience all the way through your life cycle really matters. And I can go on and on. This infusion of technology all the way until you leave the company and your exit interviews are now possibly done by a chatbot.
Yeah, or even like I've been hearing more about how some recruiters are actually interviewing candidates via Skype. Teleinterviews is a thing right now. They're talking about how in the future robots could be interviewing candidates as well. And we've come a long way since, you know, actually meeting someone in the recruitment department, having to fill out those forms and pass your paper resume. Wow.
Yeah, it's quite it's quite impressive, some of the developments in this area. Now, obviously, it's not perfect, but in some cases, you're able to even do asynchronous video interviews, meaning you would take a video interview, you see the video interview question, and then as a candidate, to respond to that question by taking a selfie of yourself, like a selfie video. And what the software does is it starts analyzing how you respond to that and starts scoring you on various competency metrics that the company or the employer wants to look for.
Okay, another thing that I found that has really exploded over this last decade is the whole emphasis on organizational culture, company culture, and of course, employee engagement as well. What are your thoughts on this?
So I often think about company culture and using data to manage company culture as one of those things where, very similar to climate change, you know, there's overwhelming amount of research and evidence to point to the fact that this makes a difference. The climate is changing. We need to do something about it. And very similarly in organizations, we know that company culture is important. We know that employee engagement is important. And yet, we don't really know what to do with it. Most of the time, 60% of the time, it's really just limited to more makan sessions after a very painful employee survey that's done once a year, once every 2 years. So it's actually been very heartening to see that this mindset has been changing. And the idea of company culture being the way that we do things is starting to permeate, maybe driven perhaps by some of the technology companies like Google, Facebook, and Amazon, which have been pioneering this space, pioneering a lot of the knowledge base that we've built around it. And how, essentially, if this thing called company culture is a cradle-to-grave, hire-to-retire phenomenon, then we better find a way to be able to track it along on a day-to-day basis. So companies like Microsoft, like Amazon, they're tracking their employee sentiment on a daily basis. Microsoft has daily randomized pulse surveys. Amazon has daily pulse surveys across hundreds of thousands of employees. And what that allows them to do is to start mapping out what are some of the key challenges that our new hires are facing. Specifically, what are the key challenges that our new hires, perhaps who came from this particular region, who have this educational background, who are this age group, what are they feeling compared to everybody else? And how is our interventions changing that? And that applies across the entire life cycle. So companies like Engage Rocket, for example, we obviously not everybody's going to be like a Microsoft or Amazon to be able to have full-time 30 people working on analytics for the company.
Right.
So being able to deploy third-party software to be able to help collect and analyze and organize that data in order to translate it into actionable business insight, leadership directions, is something that is, I mean, we're very bullish about this particular area.
Since we're talking about Engage Rocket, I understand that what Engage Rocket does is you offer a cloud-based analytics software that collects and analyzes employee feedback in real time. And that kind of gives advice to leaders on how to build better culture, you know, foster like team dynamics and things like that. The biggest word that I picked up from the description of what Engage Rocket does is feedback, real-time feedback. It's something that, you know, we're so used to doing, you know, over the years, maybe your employee evaluation once a year, or when it's time for your bonus, then you got to do that whole evaluation. But feedback is something that we've been hearing more often now that needs to come more than just once a year to help employee growth, correct?
Yeah, absolutely right. And this feedback goes in multiple different directions, right? So obviously upward feedback. I think the feedback that you're talking about is more kind of performance feedback, manager feedback down to the staff. Studies have shown that actually more than 200 hours per manager per year are being spent on performance reviews and the current feedback process. And that's to deliver feedback maybe once or twice a year.
Mm.
When you look at the data, more than 80% of managers actually think that this is a complete waste of time. If you think about 200 hours a year, that's almost 10% of the work days or the work life. So one day out of every 2 weeks is spent just going through the administrative process of delivering performance. And it doesn't even drive performance at all. It's very administrative, very compliance driven.
But thank God now we have tech to remedy this, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So there are companies like Engage Rocket. We have a module that deals with performance and continuous performance management, which allows employees to give each other feedback on a real-time basis. Say after this conversation, if you wanted to give me feedback or give me recognition for doing a good job, you can do that. And then at the end of the year, all of that is tallied together into a single score for employees. So obviously that makes it more fair. But at the same time, while technology is an important component to this process, there's a certain mindset that needs to be married with this, to be able to adopt such a process where there's this element of change management within companies that is sometimes underestimated when it comes to deploying technology. So in this particular case, for example, we need to be comfortable with the fact that we're going to be giving and getting feedback on a very regular basis.
Okay, it's time for a break. When we come back, we continue our discussion on the things that have changed and shaped the world of human resources in the last decade, including social media and millennials. It's our Decade in Review special on Resource Center. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Bias-free media. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
You are listening to a year-end, or should I say decade-end special on Resource Center. We're calling it the Decade in Review, and on this episode, we're zooming in on the world of human resources. My name is Audrey Raj, and talking to me about the way HR has evolved over the last 10 years, I have with me in the studio today, Leong Chee Tong, former regional director of Gallup and CEO of Singapore-based HR tech startup Engage Rocket. So, Chee Tong, I have to ask, the onset of the millennial generation in the workplace, like every generation before it, there have been necessary changes to accommodate, right?
That's a really good question, Audrey. I think millennials are a very loosely defined group. In some places, you might find them defined as employees below the age of 35. Some might say they're below the age of 30. But a common thread amongst these millennials, or at least the stereotypical millennial, would be that they're very entitled. They care a lot about their work and life. They really see work more like an extension of their life rather than work as a means to earn money.
It's work-life integration and not work-life balance, correct?
Exactly. Yes, and partly also because of the fact that they've grown up in an environment where maybe they didn't have to worry about where their next meal is going to come from. And there's a certain amount of self-actualization that comes from work that they want to achieve. So there are a lot of negative connotations around millennials, which I think are unfair. And I think also apply across the board to even older workers. But for these millennials in particular, one of the things that we've had to deal with companies that we've worked with is to understand how they think and why they think the way that they think. So, for example, you might find millennials who have just been working for 1 year and then decide, and we've literally had this happen to us as well, like decide, okay, I don't know what I want to do with my life. I'm going to take a six-month round-the-world trip to figure that out. And now, you know, during my days when I first entered the workforce, I didn't take a day of leave until 3 years into my career. And then all of a sudden, this person's taking 6 months off, right?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
and on one hand, like companies need a better way of understanding how to leverage the energy, talent, and creativity of millennials. But on the other hand, millennials also need to find a way to work with companies. So a report was shared by McKinsey some time back that 65% of primary school students today are going to work in jobs that don't even exist tomorrow. Ooh. So when you think about the millennials today, many of them are now in jobs that didn't exist 10 years ago.
True.
Jobs like data scientists, for example, that barely existed 10 years ago and suddenly that's all the rage. Digital marketing.
Now, content creators.
Yeah, exactly. Content creators. Like, there are companies today that hire people around the world who don't even need an office. You can work from your villa in Bali or whatever it is. And you get paid somewhere between $5,000 to $7,000 a month to write good blog posts, for example.
Yeah.
And because these jobs exist, and because millennials come well-educated, they're very mobile, other companies that need to retain them and need to grow them in their business, because they are the future leaders of companies, need to think about what they can do to match the working experience for these millennials. We're becoming the Instagrammable generation, right? We want to have post Instagram stories about our workplace so that our friends can comment about, wow, how cool it is. It's totally lit. Whatever it is, right? I mean, you want to have and create the environment in which would be friendly, not just to millennials, but to everybody, actually. I mean, essentially, we come to work and we want to have a great employee experience, right? And it's no longer just, I'm here to earn money. And my boss, because my boss might not have done what I've done. I mean, there are many chief digital officers today who have never written a line of code in Python. But they need to have the people skills, the people management ability to organize the workflow from the people and to get their teams to be motivated to do what they need to do. So from a people perspective, a people management perspective, we need to level up our game. It's no longer my way or the highway. We really need to think hard about since I don't know the subject area, I'm relying on my millennial team to be able to advise me on what's the most important thing that needs to be done and how to do it. No, I don't have a monopoly on that information anymore as a boss. Secondly, we need to look at the employee experience in totality. So obviously, getting our office environment right, our flexi benefits right, but also millennials love to be heard. So we want to give them multiple channels in which we can collect that feedback and then demonstrate how we're acting on it. And then finally, the third component of this is the consumerization of technology. Millennials are used to one-click things. If you ask them to go in on your clunky enterprise system and spend, I don't know, 6 minutes to enter a taxi claim for $4.50, that's not going to fly. I mean, you're not going to keep your millennials, or if you do keep them, they're not going to care about the enterprise systems at all, which is what you don't want. So the enterprise systems that you deploy, you better make sure that they're up to speed in terms of the user experience, in terms of how easy they are to use for everybody.
I think one thing that we can thank the millennial generation for is the fact that today the employee benefits that we enjoy, thanks to these millennials and their asks and their wants and their requirements, we've got so much more to enjoy. I mean, just think about it. Flexible working hours, remote working, a pool table in your office, bean bags, or, gym memberships. These are the kind of things that we weren't used to, but today is a reality, thanks to the millennials, I guess.
Yeah, I would say that these expectations of the workplace have trickled down, and that's great. Just a point of curiosity, at Engage Rocket, we actually did a survey of our own staff as to what perks they would prefer. And we had two main ones, a foosball table or beanbags. Strangely enough, like, it was a unanimous vote for beanbags.
I don't get it. I'm a millennial, but I don't get that.
Yeah, there's, having tried it after we got these beanbags, like just sitting down on the beanbag and like typing out some notes, I actually felt more creative.
Okay, I guess I'll have to give it a try before I know more. Yeah. But obviously, employee perks and employee benefits have come a long way. I mean, even we're talking about today, maternity in the civil sector being at a minimum of 3 months. Paternity leave is also big here in Malaysia now. But there are these minor changes that have really made a big impact.
I really have seen that spread like wildfire across companies. And I think when it comes to thinking about benefit strategies for companies, it's really critical to go down the path of personalization. Because as you said, right, maternity and paternity leave matter greatly to people who are just having parents of young children. But for somebody who's just entered the workforce and is all go, 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 I want to travel the world, I want my yoga membership, these things don't matter as much. So companies really need to understand the psychographics of their workforce. And ideally, I mean, there are many programs today where you can offer flexible benefits, like maybe 3,000 ringgit of benefits which the employee can choose how they want to spend. And there are other companies as well that even look at the medical conditions of your employees and then tailors the ability of the company to buy insurance premiums for these employees based on their usage patterns and their lifestyle. So, and that allows companies to then save money from overpaying on certain insurance premiums which they don't need.
Also, I guess the awareness on mental health benefits. I know that here at BFM, we even have allocation for duvet days, you know, for those days where you just feel, you know, like there's a cloud hanging over you and you don't want to come in and work. You just rather stay in, you know. So, I mean, that's something new as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Even at Engage Rocket, we have a WWW day every week. We call it Work Wherever Wednesday.
Oh.
So you have the hump day phenomenon of the week, right? Where you don't want to have to deal with the commute, traffic, whatever it is. Just work wherever you want. And we have a team that's based across 5 countries anyway. So there's no way that we're monitoring everybody. So it just makes sense that you let people work how they want, wherever they want. And if they wanted to just work under a duvet, sure.
So something that most of us are used to doing under a duvet is, you know, looking at social media. And of course, with the advent of social media, I guess, you know, it helped a lot of recruitment managers out there also to better spy on potential candidates. I mean, that's off the top of my mind. I mean, social media has really changed the game in the way we present ourselves or we present our employee profiles, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there have been so many, I guess, ethical boundaries which we've had to deal with over the last decade. For example, if you're a boss and you see somebody who's come in not looking so well that day, who claims that they're sick, but then you go to their Facebook profile and see that they were out partying till 4 a.m. last night. So do you fire that guy for lying? Or did you have the right in the first place to go look at his Facebook profile and make that connection? So,
But we've really come a long way, because I remember in the beginning, there were firewalls set up in most companies so that you can't access Facebook or Instagram and things like that. But today, it's actually being used as a tool at work.
Facebook has entered the workplace with one of their products, where you essentially is an internal communication platform which allows you to use the Facebook interface to communicate. And it's really interesting, actually, that we've grown so accustomed to a feed of information coming to us. And this ability to like and comment on activities, it's become so much part of our DNA as consumers and as individuals that companies, I guess, are starting to cotton on to that fact and allow that to permeate the workplace as well.
All right, Chitong, we've been talking about all the trends that have changed HR over this last decade, but is there anything in particular that shouts out to you as a disruptor in the HR field?
Well, I might be biased about this, but I think that the HR field, dealing with psychology and people working together in different groups, it is now starting to learn from how our counterparts in the customer analytics fields are thinking about customers and personalizing customer experiences, optimizing share of wallet, customer lifetime value, and so on. There's a lot that HR can deploy and learn from counterparts within the customer analytics segment. And what's driving that are two things. The improvement in HR technology, as well as the improvements in HR analytics. So it's a virtuous cycle where your technology infrastructures within companies improve to allow you to pull data from multiple different sources, to allow user experiences to be better, such that people actually engage with technology more, which then gives you the ability to grow your analytics departments, and you start getting a much better sense of what kind of employee personas do you have in your company. New mothers are sometimes treated as new mothers, but a new mother who is 26 years old has very different psychographic needs from a new mother who is 42 years old.
Mm.
how does a company react to that? It shouldn't just be a generic, oh, here's a hamper for your baby, right? I mean, it's completely different. At the same time, like, while there are developments in technology and analytics that are going to disrupt the way that HR does business and the way that the employee experience becomes so central to driving productivity and motivation, there's also the ethical element of all of this. How much should a company, quote-unquote, spy on its employees? And where does the line, that the creepy line, start to be crossed? Where you're like, you know, get out of my life, company. I'm my own person and not just an employee. So I think these trends are probably things that we need to navigate over the next 10 years. And who knows where we'll be when it comes to 2030.
Yeah, so speaking of the next 10 years, just before we go, Chitung, how do you think HR will evolve in the next decade? What are the kind of things that you are looking forward to and the things that we need to look out for?
The one thing that I'm really excited about is HR has evolved so much from the 1970s when it was really the administration and personnel department to now that we're talking about like human capital and human resource management. We're thinking more strategically about HR. And I think that over the next decade, HR will really start having a seat at the table, because very much like how marketing has moved from just lots of ads in the past to now being very performance-driven and data-driven, HR is going to be that way. To get there, number one, HR needs to be able to speak the language of business. They need to, not that many don't today, but really to level up that game, to be able to understand the core business drivers and how people are part or can influence those core business drivers for every single company, to have a seat at the table in the boardroom at every strategic decision. So being a strategic partner to business is going to be something that HR is going to become. Another thing that will be driving the HR function will be a greater degree of tech and data savviness. And it need not be organic to HR. You'll find more and more HR departments that are built in a very unusual way, where you have traditional HR generalists and specialists, but at the same time, you start having data scientists popping up and possibly even IT liaisons who might need to take requirements from HR into the way that the company deploys its technology systems. So matching these three different very disparate fields, like organizational science, data science, and technology, will be one of the skills that HR professionals need to have moving into the next decade.
On that note, thank you, Chitung, for that quick recap of the decade in the world of HR. I've been speaking with CEO of Singapore-based HR tech startup Engage Rocket, Leong Chitung. Now, for more on our Decade in Review special, join us again same time next week, where we'll be discussing how work, the workforce, and the workplace has evolved in the last 10 years. Till then, this is Audrey Raj signing off on Resource Centre, BFM 89.9.
Having trouble getting invoices paid on time? Mark Laudy of Riabu is here to help.
I started out this series with the words, "No one likes to call customers to chase overdue payments." My hope is that having listened through this series, you can see how you might never have to make such calls again. It all starts with putting payment terms on the agenda, both for your staff and colleagues and for your customers. You want to make sure that your invoice doesn't end up at the bottom of the discretionary pile, but that your customers treat it as a priority and put it on top of the must-pay pile. Start each new customer off on the right foot. If you have a mindset that it's all about great customer service, you will never have to make another collections call in your life.
For more info, visit riabu.com.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.